Welcome to EconoDay's Economist Roundtable. I'm Ann Picker, EconoDay's Chief Economist. With me today are Jeremy Hawkins and Mark Pender. Jeremy covers the other side of the pond, including the UK and Europe. Mark covers the US. This week, all focus is on the two central bank meetings, the US Federal Reserve and the Bank of Japan. While no one is expecting a move from the Fed, expectations are all over the place for the Bank of Japan. The question, however, is whether further stimulus will do any good and whether fiscal policy injections are needed as well. And I'm not talking about just Japan on that score. Overnight, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced plans for more than 28 trillion yen, which translates in these currency markets at $265 billion in economic stimulus. And while it was very short on details, the timing was kind of interesting, coming just 2 days before the BOJ's policy announcement. Jeremy, what are your perspectives on this?
Well, I suppose my sort of general perspective is that something needs to change. When we think about interest rate policy in general, well, the interest rate itself is just simply the cost of borrowing. So lowering that rate makes it cheaper to borrow. And so when a central bank cuts its policy rate, it ought to equate with an increase in lending, be it for consumption, investment, or both. So in other words, cutting interest rates should help to boost GDP. Standard textbook stuff, I guess. But that, of course, applies in the normal world, and at least what we used to think was normal anyway. But with interest rates so low now, you know, it really gets to the stage where scope for additional cuts become so marginal that benefits to potential borrowers become, I guess, pretty well insignificant. And it's one thing for the likes of, you know, going back a few years, the Federal Reserve or Bank of England or BOJ to cut interest rates from, let's say, 5% to 4%, but it's quite another to shave the policy rate from 0.05% to 0%, as the ECB did back in March this year. It really is a case of pushing on a piece of string. So my own bet really from the policy front, just in terms of interest rates, I think, you know, we just about reached the limit there. And my hope is that we're going to start to see a shift over coming months, and we'll see more of a relaxation of fiscal policy to accommodate what should remain a loose monetary stance. How about you, Mark?
Well,
I think it's a question
Do you feel that the Bank of England will reduce its interest rate next week and leave its quantitative easing at the same level? I personally would prefer to see them juggle their easing rather than their interest rate, but that's just one person's opinion.
Well, I mean, over here, we do still have interest rates at half percentage point, which I must say isn't a great deal, but I suppose it at least gives us a little bit of scope to cut rates again. I do think they'll cut, whether it's 25 basis points or they take it all the way down to 0%, remains to be seen. But ideally, I think they need to do something in addition to that to provide some kind of, you know, additional push to the lending side, as we've seen in the past when they've had various packages coming through. But I still think ultimately, you know, and when push comes to shove, you need something which has a direct or provides a direct boost to aggregate private sector spending. We think about, you know, GDP, it's really made up of two aspects. You've got private sector demand and public sector demand. So when private sector demand starts to slow, and indeed it looks as if that's very much the case over here now in the post-Brexit world, you need public sector demand to fill the gap. And my hope is that, a la Japan, we're going to start to see other members of the G7 group starting to fill that gap by increased public sector spending.
Mark, you were going to say something.
Well, yes, and this goes to the question of having to stimulate final demand, and that's a difficult question, and it's not really being driven here by the ability to borrow at low rates. That doesn't seem to get people to be wanting to buy a greater amount of goods and services. There seems to be this and this is where we're seeing the price deflation. We're seeing this a lack of spirit, this lack of wanting of the animal spirits, I guess. And as long as they goes are subdued as they are globally, it would be difficult for monetary policy, just simply by lowering borrowing rates, to stimulate this. At least that's what has proven to be difficult. So it looks like we're at a different pivot now in economic history, and that's going to take, you know, unconventional monetary policy, and we have it, of course, globally with quantitative easing, which, of course, the Bank of Japan began 15 years or so ago, I guess, and it has had limited success, would you agree, Ann? So, and the Fed can begin, you know, can expand its own if it has to, even though the economy here is improving, and it looks, again, it's up and down, but it looks again that a rate hike is more likely than a rate cut as the next move. But even so, if the Fed does have to begin to stimulate, as Germany was saying, there's not a lot of room. I mean, here are midpoints 0.375%. So there, it's going to have to be some kind of an unconventional easing, or it's going to have to be new fiscal stimulus. And, you know, the U.S. economy can, the debt to ratio here isn't that severe. So there is leeway whether there for new fiscal stimulus, but whether or not there's a political will to do that, that's another question. But let me just bounce the quantitative easing experience. How about you, Anne? How has that played out in Japan?
It's played dreadfully so far. The cut to negative rates really backfired. They were hoping for a deteriorating yen, and the yen went in the opposite direction. And basically, I don't think they've gotten any benefit from the negative rates in the last 6 months or whatever it is since they enacted them.
How about their quantitative easing?
Quantitative easing has been on hold for a bit. They've monkeyed around with it, but that's about all. And as you can see, it's been going on for years and years. And there they are, one such a quarter in recession, the next quarter out, just hanging around zero growth. And it's done very little. It's been very disappointing exercise from my point of view.
I think over here it's got to the stage now whereby, you know, cutting interest rates has more of a negative impact than it has a positive one. And I say that in the sense that if we look around, you know, the bigger central banks within Europe, you've got the ECB with its deposit rate. So this is the rate that banks should receive for placing their excess reserves at the ECB itself. That's now minus 0.4%. So essentially, you're taxing the banks to hold their deposits at the ECB. The likes of the Swiss National Bank, your deposit rate there, what, minus 0.75%. So again, it's a tax on the banks for putting their deposits there. So essentially, you're actually hitting the bank's profitability at a time when you're supposed to be encouraging them to lend, and also at a time, by the way, when they're supposed to be improving the quality of their balance sheets as well. So I think, you know, if monetary policy now is going to have any kind of meaningful impact upon the economy in a way that policymakers want it to, they have to look in a completely different direction. And we've got to see something which, as we talked a bit about earlier, has a much more direct influence upon boosting aggregate demand, because at the moment it simply isn't working.
Do you have any ideas, Jeremy?
Well, I'll come down the fiscal side now. I think to give the central bankers credit, whether or not you think that low interest rates and quantitative easing is working or not, at least the central banks have done something. And I think if you look at most of the, you know, the monetary policy models used by central banks, they will maintain that as a result of the quantitative easing and interest rate cuts undertaken so far, growth is higher than it would have been otherwise, and inflation is higher than it would have been otherwise. Now, clearly, it's difficult to argue, you know, one way or another against that. It's a question of just what the models say against something that we don't know. But I think it's reasonable to assume it has some kind of effect.
But it's having
It comes down to fiscal, and what gets me is that if you think about the level of borrowing costs now for government, they're as cheap as they've ever been. To me, it makes sense, you know, financially prudent sense, to borrow now, front-end load borrowing, so you reduce your borrowing requirements further out when presumably interest rates will be higher by then. So use this golden opportunity to actually borrow with a view to spending. And indeed, we take Europe across the Eurozone. You know, go back a few years, the public sector deficit was well over this target 3% of GDP mark. Well, last year it was down at only just over 2%. So there's scope to do it within the fiscal guidelines anyway.
And that's the same here in the U.S. But all these policy initiatives, excluding massive fiscal initiatives that we saw at the financial crisis, which did work. But since then, these things have seemed to be having diminishing returns, which questions whether or not you just keep on stepping on the gas, whether or not that's going to have any beneficial effect. I think ultimately this is a psychological question. How do you raise final demand? And you saw that you couldn't do it very well in Japan, and so that I think ultimately it's a question of the economics. Ultimately is a question of psychology of population, and there's something different now, and I think new tools are going to have to be invented. I'm not quite sure, because the existing tools are working less and less.
Question is whether monetary policy can be effective in the new scenarios that are coming forth. And this is a question we can't answer at this juncture.
No, it's certainly more challenging. I think also it's just worth thinking about, we kind of assume now that growth should be somewhere 2.5%, I suppose, something like that. Inflation should be running at 2% in line with most central bank targets. But that is something we've kind of grown up with, become used to since, 2000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it may be partly due to the Great Recession, where we saw the stock of capital, which ultimately determines productive potential for economies, collapsing. It may well be now, and with demographics, as Mark was alluding to, actual potential growth amongst the bigger countries simply isn't what it used to be. So Trying to get it above where it's actually going to be, its equilibrium rate, you're not going to win in the first place. Perhaps You're just assuming too much. We're in a new world now.
You know, have you noticed that it's a complete globalization of monetary policy? You were talking about 2%, 2.5% GDP rate, which is the U.S. target, a 2% inflation, which is the U.S. target. All these monetary policy and fiscal policy initiatives, they're uniform. There doesn't seem to be any separation at all between regions or between countries. And when it comes to national economic policy, it doesn't seem to be a political question at all. It seems to be a technical question, and it's globally uniform. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I guess perhaps that's a natural result of the fact that we live now in a very global world. So we have this free movement of capital going around to all the major countries, and indeed into and out of the emerging markets. So where one country is outperforming, you'll tend to get a natural shift of funds as a result of that. And I think that it probably does lead to some sense of general convergence in terms of economic growth, because the policies are the same. Everyone's now operating with kind of a 2% inflation target. So I suppose by definition, that means that monetary policies are all going to be at least similar. And as we've got down to the 2%, I know we're below it now, but policy is going to operate much akin to, from one country to another.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would say 2%, everything being equal, because countries are have inflation targets around that. For example, New Zealand is 2-3%. So not everybody is focused on the 2% number.
No, it's all pretty close, though.
It's close, but it's a different perspective. Similarly, many economies are shaped different and emphasize further a different industry structure and the like. For example, when I look at merchandise trade in Australia and New Zealand, a lot of dairy, for example, is most important, which is farming. You don't see that from China. You don't see that from Europe, certainly. So there are different structural things in economies across the world that don't make everything pablum the same. Guys, I think we ought to end here.